This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Here's a scenario that should be familiar to parents of very young children.
Your baby is 2 or 4 months old, say, and you're at the pediatrician's office for your child's well baby visit. Everything goes well. The doctor asks about how the baby's eating and sleeping, and then come the vaccines.
And at some of these visits, the child may receive shots for 5 or 6 different diseases.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has a suggested vaccination schedule, and most doctors do follow it. Now, for the majority of parents, that is not a problem at all. But a growing number of parents are not following that schedule. They're getting their children vaccinated on alternative schedules, reducing the number of shots their child receives at any one time, or spacing out the number of months between the shots.
So what are the consequences when families deviate from doctors' recommendations? And why are so many parents doing it these days? That's today's talker. The issue was brought to our attention by Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. We sat down with her earlier today and asked her how she got interested in this story.
Well, I was actually working on a different story about parents who refuse vaccines altogether. And when I was speaking with both clinicians and researchers, they said, you know, this is a problem, but a much wider phenomenon is parents who instead choose to delay or space out their vaccines. You should really do something on that. So I started looking into it.
And how much wider?
Well, we don't have exact numbers, but I would say that parents who refuse all vaccines are a tiny minority, whereas parents who delay or put off vaccines are well into the double digits. There's one number that 39% of parents nationwide delay or skip at least some vaccines, but that needs to be taken with a grain of salt because some of them might just be missing appointments or it's inconvenient. But it does also let you know that 39% of parents at least feel okay about not sticking exactly to the schedule.
So nevertheless, it's a huge number of families who are either not sticking to the schedule inadvertently or actively choosing an alternative schedule. So we're talking a lot of children here.
Really a lot of children. And what was so fascinating to me was that it's really a lot of parents who are basically deviating from what the medical establishment is telling them out of their parental concern or just a feeling that they don't totally trust what they're being told to do.
Well, Carrie, we're going to get into a little bit more as to why that might be later in this conversation. But I just wanted to ask you, your post was all about the concerns that pediatricians have when parents do deviate from the recommended vaccination schedule. So what were the concerns that were brought up to you?
First of all, the main concern is that the child is simply left vulnerable to these infectious diseases for longer. And the smaller a child is, the more potentially dangerous the disease is. So that's by far the main concern. I would say a very central concern is that there is simply no science on these alternative schedules. There have not been studies to look at what the pros and cons might be. And so I think that, you know, doctors and researchers would naturally be leery of having basically a gigantic experiment going on in the American population without knowing what the results might be. But then there were some subsidiary concerns, like it may be, although there's no data, that it's actually more traumatic for a kid to go for several visits of one shot each than to go for one visit of, say, 4 or 5 shots. Although this is just sort of clinical experience, there's not actual data on it.
So, Carrie, you've got a broad range of responses to this post. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about what people are saying?
As always, whenever you raise the issue of vaccines, it's a very hot button topic and it's very fraught with very high feelings. And we got many of the sort of expectable responses, both pro and con. And there were people who were saying, how can you trust the medical establishment? And other people saying, if you don't believe in vaccines, you probably don't believe in global warming. You know, so there was the usual sort of polemics. But what infused all of it was this feeling that this is a very difficult issue because the emotions run so high for parents. I mean, what can be a deeper feeling than the desire to protect your child? And there was one comment that I particularly liked in which somebody said, you don't allay a parent's fears by telling them they're stupid. This is fundamentally a trust issue, not a public health issue. And this was by someone who had vaccinated their kids, actually. Mm-hmm. But I think it just points up that why this is such a difficult problem.
Well, Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog, thank you very much for helping us get this conversation started.
Thanks for having me on, Meghna.
So listeners, we're talking about alternative schedules to vaccinating children and why more parents, it seems, are choosing those schedules. That's today's talker. Are you a parent who's considering one of these different vaccination schedules or spacing out the months and years between your children's vaccines? And if so, why? Or maybe you are one of the many parents who follows the doctor's and the CDC's recommended schedule. Why do you choose that option? Either way, do you feel like your doctor's willing to discuss your concerns? And when you hear that staggering statistic that Carrie Goldberg shared with us, that almost 40% of parents delay at least one vaccination, maybe on accident or purposefully, what do you think is really going on here? And what, if anything, should be done about it? Give us a call at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. Well, joining me now are two pediatricians with some views on this issue. First is Dr. Sean Palfrey. He's a pediatrician at Boston Medical Center and a clinical professor of pediatrics and public health at the Boston University School of Medicine. Dr. Palfrey, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you. Let me also introduce Dr. Robert Sears. He's a practicing pediatrician and author of many books, including The Vaccine Book, Making the Right Decision for Your Child. His office is in Dana Point, California, and he joins us from California today. Dr. Sears, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks. I'm very happy to join you guys.
It's wonderful to have you. Let me start by just asking sort of both of you, and I'll turn to you, Dr. Palfrey, first, with the question that sort of we ended our conversation with Carrie Goldberg, and that is, when we hear this number that some, perhaps as many as 39% of parents, at least purposefully or maybe even accidentally, deviate from the recommended vaccination schedule, what do you think is driving it, and do you have cause for concern when you hear that, Dr. Palfrey?
I don't really have cause for concern in the sense that I think in part it's our job to talk with our families. That's why pediatricians go into this business, to keep the kids as safe as we can, to keep them as healthy as we can, and in fact to be teachers. And so part of their job is to be asking questions. There's a huge amount of misinformation out on the internet, for instance. There are a lot of people who have had bad experiences personally that they associate with, say, vaccines or anything. It could be there are people who don't go outdoors. There are people who don't swim. There are people who don't cross the street. And so that they associate risky things with danger, or at least they see things that are risky. And our job, I see, as a pediatrician and someone who's actually worked in this field now for 25 years, helping the Academy of Pediatrics run its immunization program in Massachusetts, is to help our families become comfortable with the best, safest, most healthy schedule we can give to their children.
Before I continue, I realize, have I been saying your name incorrectly? It's Palfrey?
Palfrey's right.
Dr. Palfrey. Okay, I'm sorry about
that.
I try to get names right, but sometimes I mess it up. Dr. Sears, what's your response to that question? I mean, when parents come to you, I mean, presumably many of them have read your book, but what are the concerns that they're bringing to you that have driven them to want to have to vaccinate their children in a way that's not recommended by the medical establishment?
Yeah, I think the primary driving force here is how our vaccine schedule has enlarged so dramatically over the last decade. Going back to the 1980s, you know, before I was practicing, we only gave children about 8 vaccines throughout their childhood, and no more than 2 vaccines at any one visit. Now, children get a total of about 50 vaccinations spread out throughout their childhood, as many as, you know, 28 or 29 in the first couple of years, and we'll give as many as 6, even 7 different vaccinations in any one day. And so in my opinion, I think that's the biggest worry parents have is, you know, are their babies getting too many together, and it's very different nowadays compared to how we used to do things, and parents just want to know, you know, is there good research to back up the practice of so many vaccines altogether.
Dr. Palfrey, I mean, this, I think, we're starting to get closer as to the true sort of circle of reasons why parents do come with their concerns. But what are the, I guess, what is there, the CDC, I'm sure, and the vaccination boards that take a look at this have done research on the fact that there seems to be no risk or a minimal risk for, say, at 12 months or 18 months when a child comes in and gets vaccinated for 5 or 6 diseases at one time?
there seems to be no risk for more vaccines at the same time, given whatever indications are out there. I mean, there are some very rare vaccines that we can't give together, but the children's vaccines that we do on a routine basis may be given all together. And in fact, there's good scientific evidence that giving them together actually gives you a better immune response and more protection than spreading them out at an alternative schedule. The response that I have for families who worry about all the vaccines that are given to newborn babies or infants is that there are something like 14 trillion bacteria in our body, more bacteria, viruses, and other things than we have body cells. And the immensity of the exposure is happening every day, and it happens within those first hours of life, and we can't avoid that. But what it does teach us is that if we do it intelligently, we can give as many vaccines at the same time as we can safely and effectively, and it will be much less, many fewer antigens, many fewer vaccines than a baby is being exposed to by eating the, taking breast milk or eating the next potato.
Dr. Sears, your alternative schedule is one that's frequently referred to or referenced by parents. And can you just briefly describe to us how the schedule that you have in your book differs from what the CDC's guidelines are?
Well, instead of giving six vaccines at 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months of age, I spread them out a little bit, and I give two vaccines, you know, at 2 months, two vaccines at 3 months, then the same thing, two at 4 and 5 months, and then 6 and 7 months. I'm basically just staggering them a little bit, and I'm choosing the most important vaccines first. The four of those vaccines I give protect against very serious diseases like meningitis and whooping cough and rotavirus. And then what I do is I skip one of the vaccines during infancy that I don't consider very important. And that's the hepatitis B vaccine. This is a sexually transmitted disease that babies have no risk of catching unless one of their parents is a carrier and there's some accidental blood exposure during birth or during the early years. But for the most part, babies aren't at risk of hepatitis B, so that's a vaccine in my mind that can logically be skipped during those early months because you don't need to give it to a baby while they're young.
I
just take what's important, give it first, and then I give all the rest of the vaccines staggered out in the coming years instead of giving a baby so many while they're young.
Dr. Sears, I wonder that even just by opening the door to saying one of these vaccines is, in your mind, not important for children to have at a very young age, that maybe that's enough justification in the minds of some parents to question the importance of any of them.
Well, I think every parent's going to question things, but you really got to, you know, I think you have to make wise choices here. There are some deadly diseases that kill babies in America every day, and then there are some diseases that don't. And if you, I think it's very important that parents protect their babies against the serious diseases. And I think by taking a logical approach to this, by talking to a parent and saying, okay, I'm listening to your fears, I'm hearing you, so let's do this logically, and if there's a vaccine for a disease like hepatitis B that your baby is not going to catch, then let's set that aside for some years and focus on what's more important. And I feel like parents are more open to that because it gets a lot of these parents to go ahead and vaccinate who otherwise might not vaccinate.
I want to come back to this issue because I think it's rather important. But Dr. Palfrey, I do want to ask you if you can explain in a little bit more detail, say, one of these alternative schedules such as Dr. Sears has described. What is the primary medical concern that you have if parents were to follow it?
If those vaccines are given in the windows that the CDC describes, there's very little downside to it, except to the baby who is going to come back visit to visit and get shots at every visit, and to the parents who pay for those visits. But what we realize when we look at the epidemiology, the occurrence of vaccine-preventable illnesses, is that those kids who get those illnesses, as we're seeing, for instance, with the measles cases that are turning up in this country now that Europe has a huge outbreak, is that the kids who are getting them are those who are under-immunized. And so maybe a month is going to make a difference. In most cases, a month is probably not going to. But why do it when all the evidence, the scientific evidence, suggests that you can give it as early as is suggested at the 2-month, 4-month, 6-month visit, and why spread it out when you actually are possibly risking the child's health?
So you're leaving the door open for infection for longer periods of time by delaying the vaccination. You know, this is one of the issues that on WBR's Common Health blog, a lot of people responded directly to, because you mentioned there's a raft of scientific studies of data that backs up the efficacy of the schedule recommended by the CDC. Some parents wrote, you know, on the website, show me the science that says delaying is harmful. Like, is there a study that says that delaying is harmful or that delaying is not harmful? There's no set of studies to the other side of the equation.
Right. In the process of making the recommendations, people, scientists, looked at various different ages and ways of calculating readiness for a child to get a vaccine, risk of getting a vaccine at an older age. And what they ended up doing was finding that giving them as early as possible, given the child's age risk, was perfectly safe and, in fact, the safest way to do it. So it's a negative argument. We can say they decided to give it at 2 months or 4 months or 6 months or 12 months because giving it later put the child at greater risk. So they don't have necessarily a comparison group now after the schedule has been set up. But the vaccines have been studied probably in greater detail than any other medication we use. But there are millions and millions of children who are involved in these studies.
Dr. Sears, what's your response to that? That there's no science to support that the spreading out of vaccinations is helpful to a child's health?
Well, you know, I'd have to agree. There is no science to support or to show that alternative vaccine schedules are any safer. But there's just a lot of theory behind it, or worries that parents have that they feel haven't been adequately researched. And I think one of the biggest issues that I hear from parents is that all or nearly all the research done with vaccines is funded by vaccine pharmaceutical companies. And I know everyone likes to bash the pharmaceutical companies, but the truth is, you know, almost all of the safety research is performed by them or funded by them, and that you have to admit that creates a little bit of a conflict of interest. And so parents would rather see some very unbiased research, some large studies that re-look at this whole issue and go back and verify that giving vaccines in the way that we're giving them is safe enough for American children. And we have to build parents' confidence in this. And I think until we do that kind of research, some parents will continue to doubt it.
Well, I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Sears and Dr. Sean Palfrey about alternative schedules or parents choosing to spread out when their children get vaccinations when they are very young. Gentlemen, there are a lot of callers who want to join us, so I want to bring some of them into the conversation. We are at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Someone named Jess Malaika Karanja writes on our Facebook page, I will be vaccinating my son on schedule when he arrives. So an expectant mother there. And let's go to Fitchburg, where Tim is calling. You're on the air, Tim.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm doing well. What's your thought today?
I'd just like to say I agree with Dr. Sears in this matter in terms of both, saving the hepatitis B vaccine, for example, for later, and vaccinating against the more virulent bugs first. I am a family physician, actually, and routinely vaccinate my patients' children on the CDC's recommended guidelines, but I also give them the opportunity to make healthcare choices for themselves, especially when, like we have said, there is no research showing that, you know, an alternative schedule decreases your protection against, you know, these diseases. And I also want to reiterate his point that the pharmaceutical companies are funding all these research, so it's okay to be skeptical about it, especially when, your kid's health is not necessarily going to be affected by it.
Tim, thank you so much for your call. Dr. Sean Palfrey, your response.
I think there is a concern when groups that have a vested interest do the studies. However, when you get a massive organization that has absolutely no alliance to anything but the facts and studying it, such as the IOM, the Institute of Medicine, does meta-analysis, looks at hundreds and hundreds, thousands even, of studies of these questions scientifically. They're looking in the harshest, most basic scientific sense. And when they come out and say, all right, despite the fact that this may have been funded by a particular pharmaceutical company, many of the other studies completely agree with what the results were. And in overview, there is absolutely no association, for instance, between measles and autism, measles vaccine and autism. Then we as scientists, which physicians, you and I and Dr. Sears are all scientists, we base our understanding of these things on a scientific basis, and I think we can trust the IOM and the CDC, neither of which have commercial interest.
Let me take several more calls here because I want to get to as many of our listeners on this topic as I can. Carol is calling from Wellesley. You're on the air, Carol.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a new mom. I have a son who's 4.5 months, and I do vaccinate on the CDC schedule. And so just briefly, I wanted to comment, though I'm pro-vaccination, I think one of the most beneficial things that I experienced as a parent was just sitting and talking with my pediatrician. So the first time I met him, I think we spoke about an hour, and we just discussed, you know, the vaccination schedule. And he actually described pockets within the area. We were in Seattle. We lived in Seattle at the time, where there was an increased incidence of pertussis because, you know, there was a high incidence of families that chose not to vaccinate over time. And I understand this is just, you know, hearsay, and, you know, I'm just saying this, but what I found the most beneficial for me as a parent was just speaking with a pediatrician, mm-hmm. and just having them kind of communicate this with you, which I have to commend all you pediatricians who not only are, you know, excellent physicians, but have outstanding bedside manner, not only with the child, but with the parent.
Carol, thank you. I'm going to jump in there, Carol. Thank you so much for your call, because I'm going to hold your point because it wraps into sort of one of the larger issues at stake here. So thank you very much for putting your two cents in. We will get back to that, but let me take in a couple other calls. Ziva is calling from Cambridge. You're on the air, Ziva.
Hi. I'm the mom of a couple of boys, and my older son has an absurd number of food and drug and environmental allergies. And before my younger son was born, I discussed with our allergist some of the theories at the time about, you know, why we have all of these allergic kids showing up everywhere. And one of the things we discussed was whether or not the current vaccine schedule was related to that. And he didn't say it was. He just said, you know, it's a thought, it's a theory. And I sat down with my pediatrician, and we went through the list of the vaccines and decided, well, based on which diseases were most risky for which ages, how could we stagger them a little bit more?
And were you able to figure out a different schedule then?
We were. My pediatrician is a fantastic teammate, and we discussed the various risks, especially since I had a baby who's going to be going with me and my older son to the hospital on a fairly regular basis. So there's, you know, there's an added risk right there of exposure to whatever's going on in, you know, in the waiting room.
Ziva, thank you so much for your call. Great. I want to turn to one more listener here. Robin is calling from Newton. You're on the air, Robin.
Yes, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I am an older mother. I have a 22-year-old daughter and a 27-year-old daughter. And in the mid to late 80s, I like to think of myself as being alternative already. And I had many concerns about the vaccines then. I needed to go through three different pediatricians before I actually felt heard and validated with my concerns. And my point today is that I'm listening to the information on both sides here, and I think everybody's right and everybody's wrong. I mean, the problem is I really feel that there are some infants, for whatever reason, their neurological systems are going to be more sensitive to vaccines. And I know as a professional that there have been children in the past and probably currently who do end up with neurological problems that could be lifelong because of certain vaccines.
Robin, if I may ask you, I'm sorry to interrupt, but if I may ask you, what was it in particular that made you, you say you lost confidence in the medical field. What was it in particular? Was it that you couldn't find a pediatrician who was willing to explore options with you, or that they were coming to you saying, I believe the science says differently?
Yeah, well, that was one reason. I did not feel heard. I did not feel validated. I remember oftentimes walking out of a pediatrician's appointment crying because I really had some feelings and I wanted to have a conversation. And two pediatricians in particular would not engage in a conversation with me. My final pediatrician did. And I'll tell you, one of the vaccines that I said I don't see any reason for is hepatitis. And she finally agreed, and I did not give my children hepatitis because I didn't feel my children were going to be in situations where, you know, they weren't IV drug users. I told my children to have protected sex.
Mm-hmm.
So if they were smart, I couldn't see any reason for them to have a vaccine like a hepatitis.
Robin, let me jump in here and just turn your points back to Dr. Palfrey and Dr. Sears. Thank you so much for calling, Robin. Dr. Sears, we heard a whole gamut there of listeners who've gone from having really great experiences with their pediatricians, like Carol, who had an hour-long conversation with her child's doctor, to someone like Robin, who had to go to three different doctors before she felt heard. To me, this seems like the heart of what's causing the slow uptick of parents who are exploring these so-called alternative schedules, and that is, the concern of their not being heard by their doctors. I mean, is this something that you feel, you know, is a valid concern from parents?
Yeah, I think it is a huge concern, and I think most doctors are very good about hearing their patients and wanting to talk about it, but there is a subset of doctors that will kick these patients out of their office without even having a conversation. And I think that does these patients a real disservice. I think we do need to have conversations. And, you know, one of the listeners called their doctor their teammate. That's a wonderful description. And I always like to inform or remind other doctors what the American Academy of Pediatrics says about how to handle patients who question vaccines or who might want to decline vaccines. And they tell us in their red book on infectious diseases that to be non-judgmental, listen carefully and respectfully, talk about the risks and benefits of vaccines, and for parents who are concerned about multiple vaccines at the same time, develop a schedule that spreads the vaccines out as long as you're not deviating from the time guidelines set out by the CDC. And, you know, the American Academy of Pediatrics wants us to talk to these patients. They want us to retain them as patients and listen to them and work together as teammates.
Dr. Palfrey, there's also this issue that parents will always act in what they feel is the best interest of their child. It's a very individual action. But vaccination, for it to be effective, is a public health issue. You know, you have to have just about everybody be vaccinated. So there's this tension between individual choice and public health. So how is it that you would suggest that the medical community, you know, meet parents at the nexus where this concern actually lies?
I think you have to face the families and engage them and team with them, as we've been discussing, on their personal and individual basis. But it is also reasonable as part of the conversation to say that there's a larger importance to vaccinating everybody, which means that we're also protecting your infant who's less than 6 months old, or in terms of, say, flu, we will vaccinate the moms in order to protect the infant. We will protect by vaccinating one member of the family, all members of that family to some degree, and peoples in their community and their church on the subways and whatever. So you're right. The first thing that we must do is engage them deeply in their own concerns. But we also have to say to them there's a broader benefit to vaccinating as many people as we can.
You know, I wonder, because I don't wonder about that necessarily, but one thing that this has been turning over in my mind is that when we hear that maybe almost 40% of parents purposefully or inadvertently delay a vaccination, Whether or not there are robust, well-designed studies that that have shown what the effects are of such delays, it's almost as if we have an emergent study going on just based by how we have a critical mass of parents making this decision. So sometime in the future, there will be results that we can't understand of the choices that people are making. But I wonder, and this is the last question I'll turn to both of you, there was a comment on our website, on the Common Health website, that seemed to boil this down to at least one of the hearts of the matter here. And it was from someone named Marco, who says, "The CDC and scientific medical community need a crash course in human behavior and communication, and that your parents sometimes feel browbeaten by scientific evidence that is never explained in lay terms or made personally relevant." So given that, I mean, is it worth maybe advocating to the American Academy of Pediatrics to make it important to have pediatricians do these, you know, maybe group visits that parents can come in and express their fears about vaccines or their questions that are outside the very hectic well baby visits, Dr. Palfrey?
Well, now practice is taking on lots of different formats, and there are group visits, not just for education about vaccines, but about all sorts of growth and development issues and behavior issues. So that is one possible way of doing it. I think the Academy of Pediatrics does recommend that pediatricians be sensitive to and respond to the needs of whatever community that they're serving at that point. And if the community is asking for a group discussion where you can give information, they will encourage you to do that. So by all means, I do think teaching and education is one of the key things that we do as pediatricians.
On the other hand, Dr. Sears, last question to you, because you're the one who has maybe the most famous alternative schedule. This question about group immunity and really vaccinations only working if a critical mass of people have taken them, I mean, do you fear that we may enter a period in the near future where these kids grow up and we're not sure about who's been vaccinated when, that herd immunity overall may go down because of the choices parents are making?
Well, we're doing well enough so far. I do think herd immunity is important. You know, surprisingly, some people don't believe in the concept of herd immunity or don't believe it's important for our nation. I do believe it's important. And that's why with my alternative vaccine approach, I don't leave out any vaccines. You know, kids eventually get all the vaccines, so you do contribute to the herd immunity eventually. In places where I think it's safe to do, you can delay that a little bit, but eventually we get there. And I think, it's important to maintain that herd immunity, and so far we're doing a good enough job.
Well, that's Dr. Robert Sears. He is author of the vaccine book, Making the Right Decision for Your Child. Dr. Sears, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you.
And Dr. Sean Palfrey, pediatrician at the Boston Medical Center and clinical professor of pediatrics and public health at the BU School of Medicine, thank you so much as well for coming in today.
Thanks very much. It's been fun.
Listeners, you can always continue this conversation online at radioboston.org, and I do hope you do. Stay with us, because up next, the case against a Hell's Angel leader and two accomplices who are charged with murder in Western Massachusetts. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty with Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.